Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while GEICO could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, GEICO has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
This whole time, like, I've been playing checkers and you've been playing drinking games.
Yeah, so just prepare to...
It'll be great.
It'll be perfect.
Y'all motherfuckers don't watch us play throughout the year, to tell you the truth. I'm gonna be real with you, and I don't care if I get fined.
Sweet
Jerry,
with
the train is off the track.
Who doesn't love the bounty castle?
Hitler.
Just prepare to. Just prepare to be awash in unbeatable goodness.
Welcome, Pacers fans. You are listening to The Undebeatables, your semi-weekly Pacers podcast, and this is episode 181, coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm your host, Joey Gafrida, the man behind the dials and season ticket holder. This show, we're covering more of the Pacers in the playoffs. We're talking about some coach movement, lots of stats of the week. That's right, it's plural. And more recap and previews for the rest of the league. Joining me are two of our three analysts, coast to coast, like buttered toast. First from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., it's the doctor, Jason Triplett.
What is up, Pacers fans? What is up, Undebeatables? Colson's not here, so I'll say it. It's Thirsty Thursday. Drink up.
Cheers. Coming to you from Eugene, Oregon, out west, our enforcer, John Harper.
What's going on, boys? I am... extremely confident by the time this show makes it to air that the Pacers are going to be up 3-2 after winning a huge game 5 on the road, and we're going to be in position to close this thing out. So all that we need to do now is just make sure that we tell Frank Vogel what to do to close out game 6, and we should be fine.
No problem. I'll send him an email and tell him to listen to the show again.
Right. Again, still.
Right. First topic I want to get into. We talked a little bit last week about some coaches. I don't want to brag a little too much, but here we go. We kind of called it. Scotty Brooks going to Jason's Washington Wizards. Jason, you were super excited about this move. I went ahead and bought season tickets for 10 years out.
Yeah.
I saw you actually
you
made a place on your man.
Starting 10 years out?
Yep.
Starting 10 years from
starting
now?
After the Scotty Brooks year. Yeah.
You made some place on your mantles for the replica trophies that you're going to be getting here soon.
Yep. So this is going to be a little bit awkward, but I'm announcing here on this Undebeatables pod that I'm going to be leaving to start a Washington Wizards pod.
Wow.
I just think it's going to be rich with material to make fun of Scotty Brooks. So.
I will commit to a Wizards pod a month with you.
All right, let's do it. No, but I think that Scotty Brooks he's an upgrade from Randy Whitman, right? So that's a move in a positive direction. This team has been wanting to fire Randy Whitman for 3 years now, basically. So at least you get that stinky air out of the locker room. And you can build afresh, but I don't think it means that Kevin Durant is going to come back to his old haunts and play for the Wizards. And I don't know that Scotty Brooks is that great of a coach, or if he just had really two transcendent talents on his team.
Sure, I mean that's kind of the question that I'm left with. Like I feel like I was probably a bigger Scotty Brooks fan when he was with the Thunder than you and. Well, everyone was, including sure. The national media. But, I mean, looking back, I mean, What's the scouting report on Scotty Brooks? What does he do really well as a coach? What's his thing?
I mean, is super good at having two transcendent players.
Well, he is, and he's good at he lets them do what they want to do. Like, I think he's a player's coach. I think he gets along with guys well, lets them, you know, he let Russell Westbrook be Russell Westbrook, which is great for him and great for the league. And
that was also one of the greatest critiques of him in some sense.
Right, exactly. Right, yeah. So it's, you take the good with the bad. I think he also, you know, that team always played hard, I felt like, you mm-hmm. know. So they played for each other and for him. So that's good. That's a huge first building block. Especially again in contrast to Randy Whitman, who
right.
nobody, it seems like, is playing for and
sure.
doesn't necessarily get the most out of his players. So.
And he's been to the finals. I mean, he's been deep in the playoffs year after year, even when one of his superstars wasn't necessarily healthy. Mm-hmm. He's had a really good run in what's been a really tough West.
Yeah, absolutely. That's absolutely right. And then I think also, you know, he's been out of the league for a year, and maybe that perspective gives him, you know, some more knowledge somehow. You know, he just gets to watch the league from a distance and figure out, or from a different perspective, I should say, and you see more that way, right?
Yeah, and it also gives you plenty of time to sort of deconstruct your own, you know, successes and failures and,
yeah,
you know, figure out how to get better, which is...
Or go read a book about how to design out of bounds plays or something, you know.
Right. Or substitution patterns.
Yeah, exactly. When I have two really good guys, one of them should always be on the floor.
The other one, it's official now. We talked about this, kind of called it, Tom Thibodeau going to Minnesota. And he's also going to be the, I think, president of basketball operations. I think this is going to be his title. And he hired a GM. Scott Layden came from the Spurs. So, obviously, that's super good.
So, that's a win.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But Layden actually will report to Thibodeau. So...
Yeah.
So basically, I think the arrangement is going to be Layden's going to do, you know, most of the GM work, and but Thibodeau has final say over personnel.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
you know, he's not going to be out there scouting. But
and like, I'm not sure Tibbs is the guy you want on the phone brokering a deal either. Like, I could just mm-hmm. I've got this picture in my head of him just railing on other GMs because they won't give him what he wants. Like, yeah, exactly. I don't know that his personality is fit for that role, but being on the same page with you know, anyone out of the Spurs organization, that makes that team very dangerous. And they don't have to do a lot right out of the gate. Right?
No, not at all.
A lot of pieces in place.
Yeah, just keep that core together and then
upgrade add where a few you can. Vets. Sure. Yeah. So that's a dangerous team, and really, I'm very happy for them. I feel like they have a chance over the next 15 years to be one of the best franchises in this league. I mean, they're set up for that kind of success right now. So great job hiring Tibbs. You know, a great job selecting a guy with a great pedigree. You can't go wrong with anybody off that pop tree. So, and they've obviously have drafted well. So this is going to be a really fun evolution to watch.
Yeah. And you mentioned last week, we talked about this, that most likely Tibbs is going to run his guys into the ground, but that's okay because they're young, which is true. But I still worry about their long-term successes.
Sure.
But this is another guy that I think also spent a year away from the league and maybe has learned. You know, he went around and visited with other coaches to see how they do things, obviously spent a lot of time with Pop. And so I think maybe he'll take some lessons of the overall – the rest mm-hmm. Strategy that specifically the Spurs have implemented this year, you know, in recent years, but take that, you know, into his arsenal of things to use.
I think that's likely. I mean, Tibbs is a great competitor. I mean, that guy, mm-hmm. He wants to win at all costs, but he's in a position where he does have to think long term about his team, and he's going to continue to get better every year. And he wouldn't have gotten this far if he wasn't a guy who pushed himself to get better every year. So I think that probably even before he left Chicago, he knew that that was something that he was going to have to tinker with, you know, philosophically a little bit. And we'll see how that plays out. It may take a couple years to get it dialed in, but like I said, I think that Tibbs is a phenomenal coach.
And, oh yeah,
you know, with the wealth of talent that he has and really the good citizens that he has, he's in a great position to make this thing come off.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Minnesota did what the Sixers were trying to do, but they did it without the embarrassment, the shame. And they're in really good position going forward, where I think the Sixers are sort of on their way. Mm-hmm. But they have all these high draft picks that are super good.
Yeah. Well, yes and no. I mean, the Timberwolves haven't been in the playoffs for 12 years. So it's a long stretch of
I mean, I definitely agree.
Bad basketball.
But I'm saying they didn't do it where it was so bad. Like, it was, you know, we knew they weren't great. We knew they weren't maybe getting to the playoffs for a bunch of those years. But it wasn't embarrassing.
It didn't
feel
as egregious as the Sixers.
It was kind of embarrassing, though, for a while. I mean, David Kahn was a running joke in the NBA for like a 5-year span.
Yeah.
How they passed over Steph Curry to draft Johnny Flynn. They did a lot of dumb things.
Yeah. When they had just drafted Ricky Rubio.
Yeah.
Exactly. 2 point guards in a row, not named Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Dope.
Yeah. That was not a good draft.
Yeah. So they're in a great position now, for sure. Yeah. So. Kudos to them, but it definitely took them a long time to get there. So,
but they weren't trying to lose. They were just really bad at winning.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I don't know difference. If that's better or worse.
Yeah.
I think we also wanted to talk about the first half here. We want to talk about the Pacers playoff. You know, I think Jason, you want to talk about this, but the Paul George, definitely, obviously, the MVP of the team. But you had some questions about the rest of the team.
Yeah, so this line of discussion, I think, is born out of a couple things. So first, as I was walking back home after the Pacers were shellacked in Game 3, I was thinking to myself, I was like, okay, so this team is Paul George and a potential all-star-ish piece in Miles Turner. And what else do we have? Like, who else is on our roster that, like, we really want to... That I don't know. Is worth keeping around?
That we want to move forward with as an integral part of the team.
Exactly. Yeah. And then as I was camping with Chairman this weekend, we rehashed this conversation. And I had a difficult time. It's not like there's anybody on the roster that I hate. I think they're all good pieces, but I don't think that we're clearly missing something, right? And so I thought one way to frame that would be in this playoff series, who's our non-Paul George MVP? Like, who's the second best guy on this roster right now? Like, who's the guy that if this dude steps up and plays really well here and hopefully played really well in Game 5 and will play well in Game 6... And seven, if necessary, that's going to lead us into the second round or help lead us into the second round with Paul George, because that dude needs help. And I've been pondering this for a while, and I don't know what the answer is.
Sure.
Harper, do you have any thoughts? Do you have a candidate?
I do. My first thought is that I agree with you that Miles Turner is sort of the second piece on this team going forward. There's really no question that in order for us to be a first flight team, that he's going to have to develop. And right now it looks like he was a damn steal in that draft. Larry Bird did a great job finding him where he did. So that's great. That being said, this is the 2016 NBA playoffs and he's a rook. He's not really ready to take over a series for us. So what we did was surround him with some veteran guys who we think should be really impactful. Our big signing from the offseason was Monta Ellis. And I think that we were hoping to get a lot out of him in terms of scoring and a lot of leadership. And I think that he's provided some of those things. But for me, I think that this series turns, this particular series turns on George Hill. On the defensive end, he's got to match up with Lowry a lot. We've given some different looks there. Certainly Paul George has spent some time on him and is very happy to switch off just to give that team different looks. But Paul George shouldn't have to guard four guys every possession, even though he's willing to do that. Mm-hmm. But then the other part of that is George Hill is our point guard. And we need to, when we get into our offensive sets early, when he does a good job of probing defenses and hitting open shots, everybody gets so much better so quickly, including Jan Mahinmi and, you know, guys who aren't going to find their own shots, right? And right now that includes Miles Turner. So in this series, in the games that we've won, I thought that George Hill had a good effort. And I think in order for us to win the series, he's going to have to be very strong on the defensive and offensive ends.
Well, for me, I think my guy right now is Jan Mahinmi. He is game four. He was phenomenal. And Pacers shellacked the Raptors. You know, he is a guy clearly not known for his scoring. And you don't need a ton of it out of him, I don't think. But, you know, he gets a lot of hustle plays. He gets the team excited when he's playing well. He's excited when he's playing well. And he's a better player than he was in the past. And this, you know, the modern game doesn't have, you know, as many big guys. So there's a lot of teams going to the small ball. And he's kind of a big guy. And when he's playing well, he's hard to match up with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think when he's killing it, you know, I don't know that your teams are going to have a lot harder time beating the Pacers when he's playing really well.
Agreed.
Agreed. But that answer scares the shit out of me. I mean, I love Jan. I think Jan works his ass off. I think he, you know, we talked about him as being, you know, a sleeper candidate for most improved. I think he obviously got better in a lot of aspects of his game this year. But I don't know that if he's a guy that we're going to have to rely on to be successful in the playoffs. I don't know.
I don't mean, and I definitely do not mean just offensively. You know, he's he's a good defender. Like, I'm not surprised when he doesn't score 10 points, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he shoots a high percentage when he is able to get open and is able to catch the ball, which he's getting. I think he's been much, much better over the last season, and he's still improving on that, his offensive game. You know, when he's doing that, he's great. But I don't think defensively and rebounding, I think he's always generally, you know, that part of his game is pretty steady.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, but that effort part shouldn't be understated. I mean, what he brings to the offensive unit in terms of effort and setting the tone, that really does mean a lot. I mean, Monta Ellis plays very hard, but he's also like 32 years old. He don't want to go down on the ground on every loose ball, right? So it's good to have a guy like Mahinmi who's willing to put his body out there and be the hustle guy and set that tone for us. So that, you know, Monta Ellis and Paul George don't have to be the guys to go down and mix it up on the block.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, I see that. I mean, I think it's a critical question because this series is closer. I mean, obviously it's close, right? As we record this, the series is tied 2-2. But even if you look at, what do they call this? Basketball Reference, they have like series by series kind of stats and stuff like that, and overall in the series both teams are tied in terms of points per game and offensive rating per game at 93 and 103.9 respectively, which is interesting. And then they have these four factors which I think are critical to, or which they argue I guess are critical to winning series, which are effective field goal percentage, turnover percentage, offensive rebound rate, and the free throw to field goal attempt percentage. And the Pacers are leading in three of those four categories, of those four factors. I'll give you a wild guess as to which one they're trailing in terms of. It's the one that uses the word rebound.
Yeah, we stopped calling it the rebounding stat, and now it's just the JV stat.
Yeah, exactly. So this is, it's a totally winnable series, obviously. But I think we need one more dude to step up, which I guess I talked about on Monday's show. And for me, that guy is Monte Ellis. I mean, here's a guy that, like, for his career has averaged at or above 18 points a game for, like, 10 of his 11 seasons or whatever. And this year he's scoring 14 a game during the regular season, and he is scoring 11 a game in this series so far through four games. So that's a dude that I need to be more assertive and put his foot down and put his stamp on this series, right? I mean, he's not only the oldest guy on the team, but he may be the guy with the most playoff experience too, right? Although that may not be true. George Hill might have more, but still.
It seems like he should.
Yeah. It seems like he's been through more wars than everybody else on the team, right?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he does, you know, you're talking about his offense, and I think defensively he is still getting in there. And even he's obviously not scoring a ton of points, but when he's able, you know, he's stripping the ball out. He's still getting those steals, and he's starting the fast break, which the Pacers are scoring a lot of points on the turnovers mm-hmm. in the games that mm-hmm. they're winning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm positive, 100% positive, that if you asked Larry Bird this question, that he would agree with you, Jason. I mean, he just spent $44 million on this guy.
Yeah, right.
And a lot of that money was earmarked for contributions and postseason production, I am quite sure. So
right. And is this a Monte Ellis is more physically broken than we thought he was or something? Or I guess we had this conversation as the season kind of went on. But is it more Vogel just can't put him in the right position? I mean, I guess they made the switch towards the end of the year to make him more of a ball handler point guard and move George Hill to the two kind of situation.
Right.
Which has been talked about, quasi-effective.
Yeah, you know. No, we talked about this early in the season and wanted that change made. So I certainly get that change. Part of the problem in this series is that as much as that Toronto backcourt might be struggling offensively, those are two really solid defenders back there too.
Sure.
And they're just going to create havoc. And they're long and they're strong. And, Monte Ellis can't just beat them off the dribble. He can't.
Yeah, he's basically being guarded by DeRozan, who is 6 inches taller than him.
Yeah, so. And a beast. So... Yeah. This is just one of those series that I don't know that this was one that Monte Ellis was going to score 30 in, but we need for him to have a game. We need to make mm-hmm. sure that we're setting solid screens for him so that he can get some nice, opportunities to handle the ball in good positions for him. And we certainly need him to be very, very aggressive going towards the rack and in transition. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he's mm-hmm. been passive necessarily, but we certainly need more aggressiveness.
Sure. Yeah. He definitely has a lot of these. It seems like he drives to the basket, but then has no plan. Situation. He looked better in game four. He definitely had more of a plan in game four, but mm-hmm. there's a lot of, I'm going to go in there and get contact and good things will happen. But
I saw that in game three where, he's just, there's already three defenders there. Like, it's hard to score like that.
It is, and he's not a natural point guard. He's not that.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you got to wonder if at some point we don't move him to our bench. I mean, as much as Powell and Corey Joseph have been eating us up, what happens if we move Ty Lawson to the starting five for a game?
Right.
And put Monte Ellis on the bench.
It'd be interesting.
I don't hate that on paper, but I don't know that I want to try new stuff in the playoffs.
What do you mean? Well, we try new stuff every game in the playoffs.
Have to.
The playoffs are. Unless you're an upper echelon team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we already switched Miles Turner into the starting lineup. Tighten up the rotation and.
Right.
True.
But we've played Miles Turner in the starting lineup during the season. You know, Ty Lawson didn't start. You know what I'm saying?
And you don't need to even give Ty Lawson a start, but just give him reps with the one unit. Guys who will actually run, you know? When he's pushing the ball, these guys will run with him. And, you know, let Monta Ellis lead that second group. I mean, you don't have to start or finish the game like that, but might be worth a shot.
As opposed to giving Ty Lawson weapons like CJ Miles to shoot fadeaway three-pointers.
Only if they're contested or at an angle that's impossible.
That's like physically impossible.
I feel like he does some of those where he turns his body in a way that it seems like he should be shooting at the other basket. But he shoots at it. And you're like, there's no way that that's going in, Siege. Anyway.
Well, the good news is if everybody steps up and has an amazing game, then we'll be all right.
Well, that's right. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, there. Or really any one of these guys goes and kills it. Every one of those guys has their, you know, George Hill game four. I mean, pretty much everybody in game four was great. You know, George Hill was super efficient and basically, you know, just played the basically played his George Hill point guard game really, really well, which is don't make mistakes. Mm-hmm. But was aggressive while doing so, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, all he was doing was taking what the defense was giving him. But he was just doing a good job of forcing them to make a decision. So I'm hoping that we see more of that on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Well, about time for a break, I think. This week, we've got some music for you. This is from local Indianapolis artist Defame. Just learned about him from Bring It Down the Band. This one's from the Vexen EP. It's something you can listen to for free on Bandcamp. And check it out. This song is called Yang Dang Sorry. It's pretty good. It's an instrumental EP. I've been listening to it the last couple of days here. Well, check it out. We'll get links in the show notes. Thanks to Defame for that track. Check it out on Bandcamp. It's free, but if you like it, you are more than welcome to send some money their way. Next up, we got Stats of the Week.
Joey, Stat of the Week!
This one is, first one, getting into, you know, we mentioned, Jason, you mentioned that the Minnesota Timberwolves hadn't been to the playoffs for 12 years. There's another team that's had a an interesting streak in the same vein. But the Charlotte Hornets have had not won a playoff game for 13 years, 11 months, and 14 days. They got win game three of their series against the Miami Heat. But they won one, so good for them. Glad to see them playing well. So that's number one. Good on you, Charlotte Hornets.
So, point of clarification here, or question of clarification.
Yes.
So the current version of the Hornets is actually an expansion franchise. Or no, they switched from the Bobcats.
Yes.
Right. Okay. But then when they switched to the Hornets, didn't they reclaim all of the old Hornets history? Or was it only the Charlotte Hornets history? Because the New Orleans Hornets existed in the interim, and I'm guessing won playoff games in more recent time.
Yes. This is for the city of Charlotte.
Okay.
So there was no team for a while.
And the previous iteration of the Hornets prior to the move.
Right. Okay. Before they moved.
Right. Okay.
So this is for the people of Charlotte.
So confusing.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
It was a mind-bending stat of the week, Joey.
Yeah. Well, that's just number one.
The next two could be completely wrong, and I'll never be able to call you out. I'm still trying to chew this.
I still don't understand this idea of owning the history.
That's the thing. It's like,
well, if you want to buy the history, it's up for sale.
Right. Well, and that's exactly what it's all about. It's all about merchandising.
Go America.
Joey, stat of the week.
Second one is Kawhi Leonard's stat line in game three of their series. This guy, may have heard of him, pretty good. Defensive player of the year, so he's probably defensive specialist, right? Like, I don't know.
He's the two-time defensive player of the year.
Yes. So he's pretty good at playing defense. Also, is really good at scoring 32 points in a game in the playoffs. Gets 7 rebounds in that game, 2 assists, 4 steals, 5 blocks, and a total of 0 turnovers in that game. This guy's good, real good. I'm a big fan.
He's a beast. I have no counterpoint.
There is no counterpoint. That was not up for debate. Also, semi-related to that, I read a story. It was an older one a couple of years ago in the New York Times about Kawhi Leonard. But they mentioned the title of the article. It was about his frisbee-sized hands.
Yep.
Because that's his nickname is the Claw, and his hands are huge. But they describe them as frisbee-sized, which I really liked.
Which is probably accurate. They were actually talking about this during the game today, and his hands, palm to, I guess, extended middle finger is like 9.8 inches or something.
Yeah. Jeez. And thumb to pinky is 11.25.
So that's like 2 of my hands is what's going on there.
I like that you just had that stat.
I did.
Offhand.
I told you, I'm a pretty big fan.
And now finger to thumb, that's more like 10.7 inches.
I really geek out over his hand size. No, it's in the article, the Times article I was talking about. So apparently in this article they also mentioned that so for like the NBA, like whatever, the combine or whatever, but the stats that they get on the players, like now hand size is one of the things that it's like on their bio.
It makes a difference. It's one of those things that they found there was a common thread amongst great defensive players.
Yeah.
It was big hands.
Do you think he was pissed when the Spurs signed Boban and then Boban's hands were bigger than Kawhi Leonard's?
Boban has bigger hands than Kawhi Leonard?
He
has to. Have you seen his hands?
Not.
His hands are insanely large. That's a good question.
He may not, though.
Nico, look that one up and send in a comment and let us know who has bigger hands.
Floodgates are open.
Shout out to Nico, who's essentially, in his free time, is going through all the podcasts that he missed, and he's sending in all our factual errors, which is pretty much a full-time job.
We've been saying we wanted an intern, but now I'm having second thoughts.
It makes us look bad.
We don't have any control over this intern.
Exactly. We said he'd work for free, and now we just, you know, he's not listening to any orders because we're not paying him.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the playoffs. I thought I should bring it. I got a third stat of the week.
Joey, stat of the week.
This one, Monday past week, you may have heard, you may not. Tim Duncan turned 40. 40 years old. As you may have heard on the show, or just know because it's everywhere, the Spurs are awesome, and he is the backbone of that team. He has done so much in his career, and he is one of the guys that, you know, he's been around so long, he's played so great for so long, he's got some pretty crazy stats. He is close to being, you know, he's played really well at his age. He's still 40 years old, and he's still not putting up, obviously, career numbers, but he's doing really, did really good stuff this year.
He's doing work.
Yeah, he is doing work. So, actually, ESPN put together this really cool scrolling infographic-y thing on all of the stuff that he's done. But one of the things he leads, along with Ginobili and Tony Parker, is the best playoff trio. They've won 123 games in the postseason, which is number one all-time.
Wow.
123 wins just with those three dudes.
Wow. Pretty impressive.
Yep. So there's a bunch of stats on this one. It's just, you just scroll and the stats come to you. It's pretty great. He's 40 years old. Killing it. He may, I don't know. He may be back next year. I'm hoping he does. Who knows?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, he's an alien, so age doesn't matter. Yeah, he's killing it. In the playoffs, he's playing only 20 minutes a game, but still averaging 5 points, almost 8 boards, 2 assists, and almost 2 blocks a game. So it's not like he's just out there running around being an old guy. He's like contributing.
He's playing center next to LA and controlling the paint.
Yeah.
Guy's an animal.
He's good.
We want to talk a little bit about the rest of the playoffs besides the Pacers. Get into where the series are, what's coming up. And actually, the Spurs, they have already closed out the Memphis Grizzlies 4-0. I was wrong. They did not give up a game. I think everybody else was right. But I don't feel bad for being wrong this way. Pretty much just wipe the floor with the Grizzlies. But
you should feel bad. You should feel horrible about yourself, Jimmy. Because for a guy that just spent 10 minutes telling us how awesome the Spurs are.
should listen to your own hype, bro.
Which happens on a weekly basis. You should have picked the Spurs. But that's fine.
They will be playing the to-be-determined Oklahoma City versus Dallas winner. I think pretty much everyone has called the Thunder the winner of that one. I don't really see any way. It's 3-1 right now. I don't really see a way it's going to turn out the other way.
No, it's a wrap.
That's right. Yeah, it's not likely going to happen. I guess game 5 will have happened on Monday back in OKC. As we discussed last week, the Mavs were able to steal a game just because Rick Carlisle is a genius, but I think that's about all they're going to get out of the series.
And Joey, you are actually were the only person who had a sweep in that series. The rest of us picked OKC in 5. So you just picked the wrong sweep in the wrong series, man.
Oh, jeez. Mm-hmm. This is embarrassing.
Probably all of your other ones were right, so you're probably fine. But that, as of recording, this is the one series that we're pretty much locked in on. San Antonio versus OKC. That should be a pretty juicy second round matchup, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Spurs, though, all, you know, have one of the all-time great regular seasons with, what did they end up with, 69 wins or something like that?
67, I think.
Oh, it was only 67? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, in that case, then, OKC in four. No. But OKC is playing really good ball, and as we discussed in the first half of this show, they have two very transcendent players in Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, and they have a lot of nice pieces around them. I mean, Serge Ibaka is doing good work. They have Steven Adams as an enforcer. Guys like Enes Kanter off the bench. Cameron Payne doing things as a rookie, impacting the game. I like this team, but I like the Spurs better. And again, it's a chess versus checkers situation here, coaching wise. I mean, well, it's like Pop is playing that version of chess that Luke Skywalker was playing on the Millennium Falcon, like with the holograms and stuff like that. It's like triple level chess, and then Scottie Brooks is playing checkers again with turbocharged checkers, but still, I don't think
he might be playing chutes and ladders.
He might be playing tiddlywinks. I don't know what he's doing, but it's clear that Billy Donovan is not going to win a coaching matchup against Greg Popovich. That's just not happening. And even if he could, the amount of depth and experience on that Spurs roster would coach Pop up to the point where he could be Billy Donovan. If he had a stroke tomorrow, Tim Duncan and, you know, Tony Parker will get this done for their coach.
Yeah.
In terms of coaching. Now, stopping Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant, that's a whole other thing. That's about effort and intensity. I'll tell you what, I watched a lot of this Spurs series against Memphis, and Memphis was just so decimated in terms of players that I couldn't help but think, you know, this is the kind of series that a less veteran team would really get lost in, right? Mm. They would just at some point get very used to their dominance and sit back. The Spurs won the first 10 quarters or 9 quarters of the series. They won every quarter in terms of scoring. I mean, it's just a team that is not ever lackadaisical. And, you know, Jason, you've often made the point that, you know, they're just always in search of the perfect game. And that's just it, right? They're not looking at who their opponent is. They're looking at what play is supposed to get made and then making that play. And the mental strength to sweep that out in just a no-doubter in every game, even though they outmatched that team, is still awfully impressive. And if they hadn't done that, maybe they're not tuned up for this. But they're the kings of preparation. They're going to be ready, and they're going to have a couple extra days.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, they're going to get a week off. Or I think a full week off before this series would start. And they're just, they're just so freaking good.
And they got Kawhi and Kevin Durant. How much fun is that going to be?
Yeah, exactly. let's see. Predictions. We should get to predictions here. I'm going to take the Spurs, and I'm going to take the Spurs in five games.
Mm. Very strong.
I think they're just significantly better.
I agree.
Joe, you gonna call a sweep?
I'm not gonna call a sweep. I'm with you though. I think it's gonna go five. I think they're good enough for a game. But yeah, I mean, they got the personnel advantage, they've got the coaching advantage, they've got the experience. Tim Duncan has more experience in, you know, his pinky toe than a lot of these guys on OKC, and more than a bunch of franchises.
This is correct.
I think they go in five.
I thought the obvious call was going to be six to the Spurs. I will go ahead and take that. This Thunder team is just extremely dangerous. And
it's true.
The Spurs, can the Spurs sweep them? Yeah, they can. They're that good. But keeping a lid on Russell Westbrook, who had, what, 18 triple-doubles this year, and Kevin Durant, who already had his, whatever, 6-for-33 game this playoffs, I think it's going to be awfully tough to keep a lid on it. I think that OKC maybe makes some noise early, gets a split at home. Man, this seems like it's going five. I'll take both you guys got five. I will take six, but I think it's going five. And since Colson's not here, I'll pick in his stead. He has yes. OKC in seven for some reason.
You're drunk, Colson.
It's a bold move.
I know. Not even six. He's taking game seven on the road.
So it should be said that the Spurs did lose to the Thunder twice this year during the regular season. And one of those games was the very first game of the season.
And wasn't the other one, didn't they rest like four-fifths of their starting lineup?
I think they did. Yes. And we even talked about that. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, let's see. I'm looking at the box score now. Yeah, Tony Parker did not play. LaMarcus Aldridge did not play. Kawhi Leonard did not play. Tim Duncan, inactive.
they were like, even if it goes sideways, to me, he's inactive.
Who's the other starter? Oh, Dio. Dio played, but yeah. You're right.
Oh, so they had Dio holding down the house for him, huh?
Yeah.
How much did they lose by?
20.
Okay. Well, at least they won by 20, I guess.
Yep. Or 19, I guess, but yeah.
Well, let's get to the other matchups in the West. The 4-5 matchup right now, it's sitting LA Clippers over the Portland Trailblazers 2-1. That series, I don't know. I mean, I think the Clippers look like the better team. The Blazers
been much better.
The Blazers, you know, they won their first game at home. So, game four is coming up. Is it tonight or tomorrow night? No, they played last night, so it'll be tomorrow night. I don't know. I mean, I'm going to pick pick the Clippers against my will. But
I picked the Blazers coming in, but the Clippers have clearly been the better team in this series so far. So, Portland's going to have a lot of work to do to wrestle this away from them.
Mm-hmm. Portland got things going in game three, though. That home crowd, still just such a great place to watch a basketball game. That crowd is intense. And Mason Plumlee was doing, you know, crazy things in that game.
23 boards, I think.
And like 10 assists, right, or something. Or close to 9 assists or something.
Most boards in the playoffs, including Valanciunas.
Mm.
So at least we don't defend Valanciunas as bad as they defended Plumlee. It's my takeaway. I don't know.
Yeah, this one's too close to call at this point. We can't make any predictions, but I guess we made our predictions, but we can't
never stop this.
We can't call it one way or the other.
No, we can't call that one.
They'll be going up against the Golden State Warriors, who, as of recording, up 3-1 against the Houston Rockets, beloved by John Colson. That one of interest, Steph Curry hurt his knee on Sunday. Don't know his outlook. So that makes a big difference if the MVP, the reigning MVP, does or does not play. Hopefully he is well. But regardless, the Warriors are going to win this series.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to make a difference in this series.
No. But
I mean, it should be noted also that since our last recording, three games have been played in that series, and he did not play in 2.5 of them, and they're up 3-1. So
yeah.
I guess I was looking a little bit. I was looking for the prediction. Yes. I guess I'm Rockets. Just to be clear, I've already looked past you.
Okay, series is fair enough. Please feel free to do so. That thing's a wrap.
Right.
Gotcha.
In fact, it seemed like after the Houston won their game, it seemed like the teammates of James Harden were not happy because they had to play more. Anyway, so the Warriors will be matching up against, we're thinking the Clippers, potentially the Trailblazers. I guess a lot of it depends on Steph Curry.
As much as I love my Blazers, it doesn't matter to me. Golden State wins that matchup. Okay. Against either team. Without Steph Curry, if need be. I think that that team is that good.
They're pretty good. I think the Clippers could beat them if they don't. If Steph Curry doesn't play, though.
You know what I loved? My favorite thing about that game... So the game three loss by the Warriors in Houston, the whole thing was just... It was really exciting coming down the stretch, but the thing was a mess. The NBA came out with their last 2 minutes report. They said that the game winner shouldn't have counted. There were 5 blown calls in the last 2 minutes. There's a whole bunch of nonsense surrounding all this. But my favorite thing about this game was Draymond Green after the game. They had a chance to win it with about 3 seconds on the clock without Steph Curry on the road. And he just straight up dribbled it off his foot on the inbound. After the game, his quote is, "I cost us the game. The world will think that I'm talking about that last turnover, but I'm not. That happens. I was awful the whole game. I care about that turnover, but I cost us way before that." He was 9-7-7 in this game. He did have 7 turnovers, but awfully good basketball player and really responsible to his team and really had them playing the right way most of the night. So anyway, I'm sorry. You know about my Warrior tangents. You guys should have shut me down a long time ago.
That's all right. That's fine.
It's on you. I just kind of zoned out.
Okay, fair enough.
We should move to the East then. Toronto, Indiana, as of recording, of course, Sunday night. 2-2. I think we all, except for Colson, picked the Pacers. We're playing against the winner of Miami-Charlotte. And that series, as of recording, is 2-1 in Miami's favor. Charlotte will be playing, I believe, Monday night.
Yep.
So I don't know. Do we want to talk about a potential matchup with the Heat?
No, that series. Nobody's lost at home yet. That series hasn't started.
Correct.
So, yeah. At least.
And... As well, ours is dead tied, so.
Yep. Because we do the other quarter. Atlanta. Sure. Atlanta and Boston. Now, tonight, as of recording, the series is tied 2-2. Boston wins their games at home in OT, game 4. So that one series has not started.
Shout out to the Celtics.
Seriously.
Yeah, no
kidding. Looked like they were like on the mat and then
I thought they were done.
Like one. Yeah.
Thought they were done.
Awesome.
That series too close
to fight, man. They fight.
Yep.
They fight in an unbelievable way. What would happen if Tibbs and Brad Stevens were like co-head coaches or coach assistant coach? Would that just like create like a like miniature black hole or something, and the universe would explode.
Yeah, the coaching prowess would be so dense in one place that the basketball court would actually collapse in upon itself. No basketball could escape.
You think they'd have to fight the co-coaches of Phil Jackson and Kurt Rambis? Who do you take in that matchup? I'd rather talk about that than the Cleveland-Detroit series, which is over.
Which is over.
In what matchup? In a matchup of a Brad Stevens and Tibbs co-coach team versus Phil Jackson and Kurt Rambis co-coach?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, is that even a question?
Like, yeah, let's talk about it.
No, and the players are like, they're all 80s up and down the board. It's like just the stock players from NBA 2K. There's no roster difference.
They don't even have names. It's passes to power forward.
That's correct.
Do you take? Are you taking the Zen Master? Is that what this is?
But,
What about versus Mini Ditka?
Mini Ditka, 110.
I take Mini Ditka in a landslide.
Phil Jackson, 109.
So the Cleveland-Detroit series, sitting at 3-0, is over because Cleveland is better than Detroit. And LeBron James will not lose in the first round, for sure.
No, he's got like, doesn't he have like the best first round record of anybody he's ever never, or something?
It's, his team has never lost in the first round. And I think they've only...
But he's only lost like a handful of
yeah,
games.
Yeah, yeah, they've only dropped, sure. I think, I want to say 4 games since he's been playing professional basketball.
Wow.
Like in the that, just yeah, in the first
crazy.
Round. It's,
yeah, no, his winning percentage is like in the 80s or something.
Don't match up against the Cavaliers is my is
I guess
my
that's
point.
What happens when you play in the Eastern Conference your whole career.
Yeah.
And it's a weak Eastern Conference.
For sure. But this is why you fight so hard for that 7th spot.
Yeah, exactly. Good point. Yeah, as we record the Cavs are... They're up 3-0 in the series, and they're up by 6 in the fourth quarter.
Yep, in Detroit.
Of game 4, yeah.
This will actually, there's 10 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and this is about the time where the Cavs will just put the chokehold and put them to sleep.
Yep. Should we spend a couple minutes on Stanley Johnson and the LeBron bump? And how you don't poke the bear? Can we rehash the lesson of just don't poke the bear?
Sure.
So it was game 1 or 2. Teams are going back to their huddles after a timeout, and LeBron James just bumps into Stanley Johnson. Classic LeBron. He does this to coaches and other players all the time.
Referees, if need be.
Yeah, exactly.
Fans, agents.
His wife, if he's having a bad day. His stupid kids. So, what was it after the game? Stanley Johnson was like, oh, yeah, he knows I'm there. Like, he's aware of me on the defensive end. He's claiming that he had shut him down or something like that. And then LeBron proceeded to torch the Pistons for the rest of the series. Is that it in a nutshell, basically?
Yeah. I mean, just talking garbage. Just to LeBron, which you just... Yeah, you don't do that. You just made him mad.
When you're a rookie!
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, just essentially, you know, it's like, hey, I shut down this guy who has the potential to be, you know, one of the greatest of all time. And I'm a rookie. I'm 19 years old.
I put that on Van Gundy.
I think after
those comments, Van Gundy did talk to him and told him not to do that.
Oh, well, he definitely talked to him, but I don't know. Don't you have a conversation in your locker room with your guys even before the series? Like, hey, don't poke the bear. Just please don't poke the bear.
I think that's one of those things that goes without saying, though. Like if they're basketball fans, they've been watching.
You gotta say that.
Yeah, I guess so.
Coaching, nothing goes unsaid. You say everything that comes into your head. They talk for like 30 seconds after every play. I have no idea what they're talking about. There's not that much to say, so you can say that then.
Oh man.
Yeah, Stanley Johnson.
Valuable lesson for Stanley Johnson.
I mean, it is. And honestly, Stanley Johnson has done, a pretty good job on LeBron. But the reality is that LeBron gets guarded by 8 guys. And to say that LeBron is aware of me, well, that's an idiotic statement to begin with anyway. He knows where all 10 guys are. He knows if somebody on the bench wants to take a piss.
Yeah.
He
knows what
everybody
had for breakfast. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, the guy, yeah, he knows where you are. He knows where everybody is. And the only reason that he knows that is so he can abuse you. So don't help him.
Yeah, and he knows that you're a rookie.
He so knows you're a rookie.
Did he not see all those hilarious Lance Stevenson memes on the internet? Because those were hilarious.
We should send those to his Twitter account for him.
Don't forget.
Hashtag don't forget.
Hashtag never forget.
Don't poke the bear.
Anyway, the Cavaliers will be playing the winner of the Atlanta-Boston series. And I'm going to take the Cavs against either of those teams.
Yep.
To be quite for honest.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, Boston has no chance, and Atlanta, good a team as they are, yeah, it's still the Cavs.
So Pacers and Cavs in the Eastern Conference Finals. I like it.
Is there a team that you guys would rather see in that series?
Which series?
You mean
which,
out of the Charlotte, Miami?
Well, I was thinking of the Boston Atlanta series. Is there a team that you'd rather match up with out of that? Have the Cavs match up with?
I want to see more Boston.
I mean, I think that Atlanta matches up with them better.
Yeah,
I think they have better playoff experience and whatnot. But
as do I.
Yeah, I think it would be a better. I mean, I guess Jason, I'm kind of on the. You made your comments about Boston maybe being the team of destiny, and I would like to see the team of destiny play the Cleveland Cavaliers. I still don't know that the team of destiny is good enough to beat the Cavs.
Yeah.
But I think like just LeBron James. We'll just have to rename him the Fate.
Yeah.
He's riding the destinies.
Yeah. And he's like, and you will lose to us in six. Thank you, LeBron. So that's it. Every night still, right now, there's been pretty much good games every night. Just turn on, you know, TNT or NBA TV if you get that channel, Jason. ABC if you're watching some of the bigger games.
And if you're in Indianapolis, go check out a playoff game Friday, April 29th at the Fieldhouse. Do it.
Don't
think about it. Just do it.
Thank me later.
Yeah, they're super fun. The fans.
But Joe, you're not allowed to go to the Fieldhouse. Well, every time you go, they lose.
I do my part by keeping my luck at home. Did you guys see? Was Drake at Game 4? Is he traveling to the away games?
I did not see that, but they pointed out some people in the crowd, like. Rajon Rondo was there for some reason.
He was there for some reason.
Victor Oladipo was there.
The Luckster.
Oh, yeah, Andrew Luck, I saw.
Yeah. Andrew Luck was there. Some other really random NBA guy.
Adam Silver was at one of the games. Three or four.
Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, go get yourself.
But no, they didn't show Drake, so I don't know.
So I assume no, because he would be at courtside for sure.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, until next time, you can find us on Twitter. We are at Undebeatables. We're on Facebook.com/TheUndebeatables. Our website is TheUndebeatables.com. There's a contact form there. You can send us all a message. You can review us on iTunes. It really helps new listeners find our show. We got t-shirts for sale on the website /store.
And for our once and always coach, Bobby Slick Leonard, now in the Hall of Fame, sitting there with his 529 wins. Turn out the lights. Party's over.
I like how you guys are trying to bring this word into the lexicon.
Party sober.
Sober, bro.
It really flows right off out the mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And into the face of grammar.
Eat it, grammar.
But also, I may have done a really poor job, and that is somehow really sexist, and I didn't. I just did a bad job with my pose. So.
Yeah.
That's also possible. If that's the case and your sister hates me, you can just apologize for it.
Okay. I will. In the meantime, you can check out Geek Feminism, the Geek Feminism Wiki, for a definition on intersectionality.
For a much better definition of intersectional feminism. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm impressed that you knew all that stuff. I've never even heard. I guess I don't know much about that stuff.
Yeah, well, I went to McAllister, bro.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what them ladies be talking about sometimes.
Where's my dinner?
I hope upon hope that you're still recording right
now. No, dude. She's actually at a Game of Thrones party right now.
Yeah.
No, I hope my neighbors heard me and were like, that dude's an asshole.
Whatever. The asshole who was mowing his lawn at 8 o'clock at night while we're trying to podcast?
I know.
Should know better.
Maybe that's why he mows his lawn at 8:30.
He's like, I've heard their show, and this helps.
He's like,
they needed some white noise.
I've heard their show. I think it just needs more lawnmower. I think that's it. That's what it's been missing.
There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to Geico than saving you money, Geico also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the Geico app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.